You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gervais.
Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gervais. I'm the host of the show. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a healthy, sustainable world. A world where our food is free from GMOs and harmful chemicals, where our food is healthy and safe for our children, our grandchildren, and generations to come. If you share our vision, please go to our website and join us by subscribing to us. And please don't forget to confirm your email. We'd also like to thank bensound.com for our new intro and outro music.
Hi, it's Carol again. Do you drink almond milk? Do you know that packaged almond milk contains all sort of nasty additives like carrageenan and barely contains any actual almonds? The good news is that you can make fresh almond milk at home in minutes. Once you taste the creamy, fresh flavor of homemade almond milk, you'll never go back. I make my almond milk at home with a Nutiana nut milk bag. It's great, easy to use, easy to clean, and makes my almond milk silky smooth. It's made from food-grade nylon, so I'm not worried about any leaching. In addition to nut and seed milks, you can use it for sprouting, making cold brew coffee, juicing, and more. Buy yours today by searching the Nutiana nut milk bag on Amazon. That's Nutiana nut milk bag. Or go to Nutiana.com.
You're going to love this bag. My guest today is Diana Reeves. Diana is a Connecticut mom turned activist. She founded GMO Free USA in May 2012. Diana was a CPA on a fast track at a major accounting firm when her firstborn son was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 2. She walked away from her career to take care of him and became a stay-home mom. Her son died before he turned 5, and she has since raised 3 children. After Diana's family developed autoimmune disease and other problems, she began to learn about the connection between these illnesses and genetically engineered food. Her family's health-related challenges, her lack of tolerance for putting children at risk, and her anger with untested and unlabeled GMOs have instigated her passion to bring positive change to our broken food system. GMO Free USA recently toured with Neil Young and Promise of the Real on the Monsanto Years Tour to 11 cities, and today we are happy to have her on the show.
Diana, welcome to Food Integrity Now.
Hi, Carol. Thank you so much for having me on today, and thank you for all your great work, because you really do amazing things here, and we're very, very appreciative.
Oh, you're welcome, and I have so much respect for you and your commitment to the food movement. Can you share with our listeners a little bit more about why you founded GMO Free USA? We'd really like to hear your story.
I'm sure. I'd be happy to. GMOs first got onto my radar in the mid-1990s. I read an article about these new crops that were engineered to be herbicide tolerant, and I said to myself, let's use some common sense here. This sounds like a bad idea. And I made a mental note to keep GMOs on my radar and to keep an eye out for health trends, because whenever you engineer something so that it can be sprayed with chemicals, you're putting people at risk, because these are synthetic pesticides and they're toxic, basically. So from there, we went fast forward a little bit. My family was diagnosed with autoimmune disease about maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I think it started. And we went back to back to back. First it was my older daughter, then it was myself, then my younger daughter, and my husband was last. So 4 out of 5 of us have celiac disease, and all 3 of us girls have Hashimoto's autoimmune hypothyroidism as well. And we are very sensitive. We react to trace amounts of gluten, dairy, soy, and also came to find out that GMOs make us sick as well. As I removed these things from my diet, my health started to improve. The last thing to go in full was the GMOs. I had chronic fatigue, which developed, and it lasted for about a year, and I couldn't figure out why, because I thought my diet was very clean. But it turned out, 3 friends said to me, check your vitamins. And I said, oh, come on, I could not possibly be that sensitive. But it turns out that I was. And there were 2 vitamins I was taking that one contained, it was Country Life, calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, And it contained GMO corn. It was sourced from something, you know, that was made with GMO corn. And then there was also a fish oil that had traces of soy, which was GMO soy. And when I swapped those out for equivalent formulas from other companies that were made without GMOs, my health miraculously returned. The fatigue lifted, and I felt so much better. I had, you know, some horrible symptoms. I had, you know, bloating and digestive issues to go with it, and some other things that we don't need to talk about. But I was not well.
I'm glad you brought up the vitamins, because a lot of people may not even think to look there.
They don't. And, you know, I was guilty of not thinking myself, you know. And I have since actually found out that I have a mutation called the MTHFR mutation, which inhibits the body's ability to detox. And that could be, you know, one reason that I am so sensitive. But apparently 30% of the population has this mutation or some form of it. So I'm not alone. I became involved in 2011-12, I guess it was, in Connecticut, which is my home state, with a friend who invited me to a meeting and worked on labeling GMOs in Connecticut. And in 2012, in May, we had a bill that had very wide bipartisan support, and we really thought for sure it would pass, but the bill was eviscerated at the end of the session by the governor, and we never knew exactly what happened behind the scenes. We suspected that the bill, you know, was eviscerated for one of two reasons. Either there was a direct threat from Monsanto, because they had, it was in the news, you know, a few months before, that they had threatened to sue the state of Vermont, because Vermont was considering the passage of a similar piece of legislation. Or it could have been, you know, a trickle down from the threat to Vermont. So, you know, I was really devastated, and I thought, you know, I was one of 1.2 million people that signed a petition to the FDA to, you know, ask for mandatory GMO labeling. And our legislators weren't allowed to do their job because of corporate bullying. So I started to think that there had to be a better way. And I woke up the next morning and I said, there is a better way. We can do this. You know, we can bring the country together to speak collectively with our wallets by developing a long-term, very focused and strategic boycott of a big food company that refuses to cooperate and remove GMOs and isn't listening to us. And so the Kellogg's boycott was born. And I set out, I chose Kellogg's actually, let me step back, because Kellogg's markets their products primarily to children. And a little piece of my history is that I lost my first child to cancer. And I have zero tolerance for any company or anyone that puts children at risk. And in my heart, I believe, you know, by feeding children all these toxins and these novel proteins, we are putting them at risk. And so that was a big part of why I chose Kellogg's for the first boycott. And we've since added Gerber, and we've also added Scott's because they're doing GMO grass, which is Roundup Ready. And once again, you know, they're going to be marketing that to consumers who will be spraying Roundup over their yards where their children play and their pets run. So that's not a good thing either, especially as Roundup or glyphosate was just declared by the World Health Organization in March to be a probable human carcinogen because it causes cancer in laboratory animals. So here we are, GMO-free USA, and fast forward to, you know, another piece of my story, which is very ironic, and it really is the first time I'm talking about this publicly. It's not easy. So this is something that I've never shared before, and it's just, you know, in my mind, I was already involved in the food movement, and it's quite ironic and perhaps destiny that this happened. But we lost our son to cancer in 1988, and he was diagnosed at the age of two with a tumor, which was a thalamic tumor. It was a deep-seated tumor in, you know, basically the middle of his brain, and the doctors said that he was born with it. And my little guy went through four brain surgeries. He went through 5,500 rads of radiation before that. He went through chemotherapy, and they finally were able to actually diagnose what he had. It was a fibrosarcoma, and the doctors were quite puzzled because fibrosarcoma is a cancer of the connective tissue, and there's hardly any of that in the brain, so they looked elsewhere for a primary site, and they didn't find it. And basically, they said there were only 37 diagnosed cases in the history of modern medicine at the time with what he had. So they said, you know, as I say, that he was born with it, so you think, oh, my God, what did I do? You know, children aren't born with cancer. It just doesn't make sense. And, you know, the doctor said, oh, it was just probably a fluke and, you know, not to beat myself up over it. But anyway, within the very early part of my pregnancy, actually it was 1 week after the test was positive, my husband and I were out in the yard and we were spraying weeds and we had Roundup. And I carefully read the label and it said things in those days like non-toxic and biodegradable. And I thought to myself, okay, well, this is safe, no problem. So I sprayed the weeds and the nozzle exploded and it went all over my hands. And I stood there and I said, oh my God, they better be right, because if anything happens to this child, I'm going to know why. And then I tucked it away and I never thought back to it again until about within the last year, I met two scientists, one last summer and one in the fall, who were close to the Seralini study. One was actually an author on the study and the other one was a European scientist who knew quite a lot about it. And I asked both of them, because, you know, this came back into the forefront of my memory, what types of cancer did they find in the group of rats in the Seralini study, which was quite an interesting study. It was the first two-year feeding study. They had groups of animals that were fed genetically engineered corn, some with and some without Roundup, and they also had a group of animals that was fed no GMOs, but they had environmentally relevant levels of glyphosate in their drinking water. So I asked, what types of cancer did they find in the group of rats that had no GMOs but environmentally relevant levels of glyphosate in their drinking water? And you may not know this, but the Seralini study was a toxicity study. So when they published the paper, they were allowed to say tumors, but they weren't allowed to disclose the types of cancer because it did not meet the criteria for a cancer study, because the criteria is more rigorous, larger sample sizes, etc. So what they told me was there was only one type of cancer. Both of them told me there was only one type, and it was a fibrosarcoma. So I basically cried my eyes out, which I cry every day over the last year. I've been crying every day. And, you know, it's hard because I can't help but think, you know, what if I hadn't done that? Life would be so different. But I think my son was an old soul. He was a very, very interesting child. I mean, he died at the age of 4.5. We had a 2-year battle. He was so mature and he took it all in stride and he worried about everyone else. And I think he was here for a reason, because, I mean, what are the odds that I would be so heavily entrenched in the food movement and then find out that I had such a very deep and dark connection to what's been going on with our food?
Thank you so much for having the courage to share that piece with us, Diana. And perhaps this will help somebody else who may not know about the poison, the glyphosate.
I agree with you. And, you know, when you expose an embryo in a very early critical stage of development to toxins and chemicals, you know, awful things happen. And, you know, both scientists, I just have to say this because I am not a kook, both scientists said to me, you don't know what other factors might have come into play, so don't beat yourself up. You know, there could have been other toxins involved, et cetera, et cetera. And yes, I totally agree that that's possible, you know. However, with the mutation that I have and my body's inability to detox, it just leads me to think that there was a very direct connection.
That's got to be hard for you, but the work that you are doing and the lives that you are changing through your education, you have such a wide reach on GMO-free USA, that is something that you really need to feel proud about.
Thank you. And that is our mission. Our mission is food transparency and food justice. And, you know, literally it just eats at me and it kills me when I think about children that, you know, their families don't have the money to be able to buy them foods that don't contain GMOs and they're eating Kellogg's. You know, it's not right. We need food justice. Everyone should have access to safe and healthy food.
Yeah.
And so we educate.
Does Kellogg's ever try to contact you? Is there any adverse reaction from them from what you've been doing with the boycott?
That's a very interesting question. Early on in the days, you know, when I had just begun the boycott, several things happened. First, I called 3 times and I asked if Kellogg's used GMOs right before we started. And I was told, Kellogg's uses GMOs, but the FDA says they're safe. The second time I called, which was after the boycott was underway, I was told, Kellogg's doesn't know if we use GMOs because we don't test. And the third time I called, which was well into the boycott several weeks later, I was told, Kellogg's doesn't use GMOs, but we can't guarantee there's no cross-contamination. So it's funny how the story changed there. But I actually did request a meeting with John Bryant, who's Kellogg's CEO, and I was told that, you know, they were very sorry, but he was unable to meet with me. but they would be happy for me to drop off a petition, which, you know, I told them I had, you know, and I should just let them know when I was coming. So we actually ended up doing honk and wave demonstrations, which were lighthearted demonstrations in 75 plus cities around the country, which were Boycott Kellogg's demonstrations. We had banners and posters, Boycott Kellogg's, remove GMOs, bad for the environment, bad for health, blah, blah, blah. And so I actually flew to Battle Creek, Michigan, and we did a demonstration right across from Kellogg's headquarters. It was me and a bunch of mothers with small children, toddlers, and, you know, some infants and, you know, strollers. And we stood out there with the banners where they could see them for over 2 hours. And then we went into the building to deliver the petition. And when I got inside, I went up to the reception desk, and there was no eye contact. She looked down, picked up the phone, and said, "She's here." And so I tried to talk to the receptionist. I asked her something, you know, just small talk, and she said, "I'm not allowed to speak to you." And I said, "Okay, I'm terribly sorry. I didn't mean to put you in an awkward position." So we waited. And then down the stairs came an imposing gentleman who I would say was in his probably mid-40s. And he gave me a fake smile, shook my hand, and I handed him the petition. And I explained to him that, you know, I'm very concerned about children and that we're putting children at risk with these genetically engineered foods and agrochemicals they're sprayed with. And I told him my story about the vitamins. And I said, "Please, please take this to heart and talk to John Bryan and explain that this is a problem and that we're putting it, you know, children at risk and blah, blah." And I also gave him studies that I asked him to please deliver to John Bryan, you know, that had shown that there, you know, are harmful effects are suggested, you know, from GMO consumption and a variety of different studies. And he gave me another smug smile, shook my hand, and he left with the materials I gave him. And I turned to the receptionist, and he had told me his name, but I turned to her and asked, "Could you please tell me his title? I'd like to send him a thank you note for taking the time to come and talk with me and to receive the information." And she said, "I'm not allowed to tell you." So I went home and I looked him up on LinkedIn, and it turns out that Scott Lindahl was Kellogg's Global Chief of Security. Now, Carol, you've met me. Do I look like a security threat?
Oh, wow. So they just sent in security instead of one of their top executives.
That's exactly right.
Which tells me that you are a threat to them.
Well, their sales have been down. The boycott's been going on now for about 3 years, and they've had 2 years of financial problems. So I know we're making a difference. We took the Kellogg's boycott cross-country with us. We constantly promote it online, and we've done food testing, which does not put them in a favorable light when you find Roundup in a children's cereal at a level that's high enough to kill good gut bacteria, and you find the corn that they're using is actually an insecticide that's regulated by the EPA because insects die when they bite into it. It actually kills insects. That doesn't put them in a very favorable light. And their sales are suffering as a result, as they should, as the word gets out.
Well, that was going to be one of my next questions. I wanted to hear more about what GMO Free USA is currently doing in regards to the food testing. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, we really feel that, as I said, you know, transparency is very important. And with all the different answers we got from Kellogg's, we set out to find the truth about their ingredients. So I think we were actually the first organization to start doing any type of testing of commercial food products. And so far, we've tested several of Kellogg's products. We tested Fruit Loops first. We tested a Morningstar Garden Burger, a Morningstar Veggie Burger. We found Roundup in both of those at a level that was relatively comparable and high enough to kill good gut bakteria. And then most recently, we tested a Kashi cereal. It was Kashi Go Lean. What we tested was a box that was not verified by the non-GMO project. It was, you know, around the time it was verified, and we didn't know that it was in the process of being verified. So we considered not releasing the results, but then at the end of the week, just a week and a half ago, we actually saw boxes that were not verified still on the shelves, and they were mixed in with boxes that were verified, which basically is deceptive because if people see, you know, a display, they expect, you know, that the quality of the product is going to be consistent. So we ended up releasing the results last week. And what we found in the Kashi cereal, which was not verified once again, was extremely disturbing. Not only were there significant levels of genetically engineered soy and corn as well, but the level of Roundup, the level of glyphosate residue in that box was approximately 6 times higher what we found in Fruit Loops. And this was the first time that the lab actually detected AMPA, which is a metabolite. It's a breakdown product of glyphosate in the food product, and the level was even higher than the glyphosate. I think it was 0.68 parts per million glyphosate and 0.81 parts per million AMPA. And when you put those two chemicals together, their toxicity is magnified. They're more toxic than either of them alone.
And that's an important thing to talk about. I don't think a lot of people are aware of what you were just talking about. Can you explain that a little bit further about the concoction of combining chemicals?
So I'd be happy to. It's called the cocktail effect. And essentially what happens is when you put, you know, these two toxic chemicals together, they sort of play off each other and the toxicity is magnified. So that's basically, you know, what happens when you have, you know, more than one pesticide together in a concoction. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that. And do you have a lab that you're using? Obviously you'd need a lab to be able to do this testing. How is the testing done? I'm curious about that.
We use independent laboratories for testing, and, you know, we don't disclose the names of the lab publicly because when that happens, then the labs are, you know, subjected to industry pressure and threats and whatnot from what we've seen in the past. So I can actually tell you there was an interesting story. There was a lab in the U.S. that we thought we were going to be using, and we contacted them, had everything set up, all the pricing and whatnot. I mailed the first sample to them, and then I got an email back. We're terribly sorry, but we're unable to help you. And it seems that, you know, somehow something happened and they said their board discussed it and they did not want to be involved. So we had to, you know, choose a different lab.
Well, it's good to know that there are labs out there that will do independent testing because we need more of those.
We absolutely do. Totally.
And do you plan on expanding the testing, or what do you foresee happening in that area with GMO-free USA?
Yes, we absolutely will be continuing and expanding our testing. We've had kind of a rough year. My co-director's parents both passed away from cancer within 4 months of each other, and we weren't really at full steam during that time. Now we're getting back on track, and we're going to be ramping it up.
I think that's just wonderful because one of the claims of the biotech industry is that the glyphosate does not get into the foods or our gut or any of that. And more proof that we can assimilate, the stronger we are in getting it banned.
GMO-free USA, by the way, is a 501c3 nonprofit. We were approved about a year ago, so we're relatively new. But anyone who's interested in contributing, making a donation, which is tax deductible to food testing, can find a donation button on our website, which is gmofreeusa.org.
Yeah, wonderful. And I highly encourage people to help out this organization in any way they can because they tirelessly keep us up to date with all the latest studies and the latest information. It's just such a wonderful source. I would also like to discuss with you, you toured with Neil Young. That had to be pretty exciting. I know I met you in person in Denver. Well, I didn't meet you the first night. I was there both nights, but unfortunately the first night we had so much rain.
We were rained out. The activist village was, yeah.
But I would love for you to share with our listeners some of your experiences because that had to just be incredible. Did you go to 11 cities with him?
We did actually. We were in Milwaukee first, even though there was no formal activist village in Milwaukee. We went because it was a great opportunity just to reach out to people and educate them. We passed out materials and talked to a lot of people, and we gave out seeds. We had heirloom seeds, which were wonderful. They were donated by Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company, and they were printed so that they were a commemorative kind of takeaway from the tour. They had Neil Young's picture. They still do because we have some left. Neil Young's picture on the package and inspiring people to take back control of their food, to grow a little something, you know, and reconnect. And so we handed those out, and some of the conversations we had, you know, along the tour were just so eye-opening. And we were really given a very, very positive response by the public. We got so many hugs, and so many people, you know, thanked us for what we're doing and said how important it was and how supportive they were. And it was really incredible.
Do you think a lot of the people that came were really aware of GMOs, or what did you find?
We found a mix, but I have to say, you know, that the level of awareness has been growing, and even in the Heartland, it was really, really nice to see. But there were many people who came up to us and said, you know, what's a GMO? I've never heard of this. And for those people, we had, you know, infographics that we showed them, and we had literature that we handed out. And when they found out, a lot of them were horrified.
Yeah, I'll bet they were. And the awareness that Neil and Promise of the Real have raised, I think, is really powerful, too, because I don't know if they did this at all the concerts, but when they had the farmers coming out on the stage sowing the seeds, and then halfway through the concert in Denver, they had these guys jump on the stage in full hazmat suit, and it was very symbolic spraying of the chemicals. And I'm just wondering if you thought, like, a lot of people got that, what was happening.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did get it because there was a lot of, you know, applause, and, you know, people kind of got rowdy. I think people are really starting to get it.
That's great. And I know that Jeffrey Smith from the Institute Responsible Technology was there as well. So the amount of education between both those groups had to be just incredible.
Well, it was, yeah, we reached a lot of people. We reached thousands, just put it that way. You know, we handed out thousands of brochures. So it was great. It really was.
Where do you see the future of this food movement? Just projecting on down a year or two. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I do. I think the free market is really starting to prevail even without the labeling. And I think now we're at a critical time where, you know, we all need to be kind of on our toes about what's going on around us, because we have legislation that, you know, has been written which will outlaw GMO labeling at both the state and federal level, and, you know, would overturn Vermont's labeling law and do a whole bunch of other nasty things, like overturn crop bans that have been passed in California and in Oregon to protect organic farmers from contamination. So I think we all need to be on our toes, and we need to be, you know, knocking on our legislators' doors and visiting our senators and telling them not to vote for this. But I think, you know, if nobody was sick, nobody would care. But 80% of the $2.7 trillion we spend on healthcare is spent treating chronic illness, chronic disease. And so I think because so many people are sick, you know, people are changing their diets as a result. And I think, you know, that's having a huge impact on, you know, processed foods and on the food supply.
Yes. Well, I want to back up a second when you were talking about the DARC Act, which is H.R. 1599. And in essence, it's my understanding that if this, it's already passed the House and it needs to go to the Senate next. And if this is passed, this will just preempt all state labeling, and it will make labeling not mandatory. It will be voluntary. And also that the word natural on a product could mean that it contains genetically modified ingredients, and that would not have to be labeled, obviously.
That's exactly right, Carol. It kind of goes beyond that. What people aren't aware of, so we have companies right now, like, for example, General Mills, labeling something like Cheerios, saying that it's not made with genetically engineered ingredients. However, we don't have a standard. There is no legal standard that defines what it means to say something is made without genetically engineered ingredients. And as part of this, you know, endeavor by the government and by the grocery manufacturers and Monsanto to keep us in the dark, they have a new standard which is coming out for non-GMO labeling. And that new standard would actually allow things like refined sugar, which is made from genetically engineered sugar beets, it would be allowed to be labeled non-GMO. And also things like canola oil and cottonseed oil and soybean oil and corn oil that are made from genetically engineered crops, those would also be allowed to be labeled non-GMO. And so you have to ask the question, what does it mean when Cheerios is labeled non-GMO? And the answer in my mind is they haven't changed the label, okay? Basically, the ingredients stand. It still says sugar. It does not say cane sugar. There is a chance that General Mills has really not changed much of anything. We don't know what their tolerance level is for contamination, whereas the non-GMO project very clearly defines that. It can't be more than 0.9%. We really don't know anything about what's in that box, and we can't say they've changed anything. And so if they are allowed to pass this legislation, our food supply will be a total mess.
And that brings up a good point about the term non-GMO and non-GMO project verified. There's a difference. And what you said about the non-GMO project verified is 0.9%. But if it just says non-GMO, who's checking that?
See, that's the problem. Yep. You got it, Carol.
I think this is very much by design because so many people are confused about what the label means. And a lot of people assume that if they buy something that says non-GMO, that it does not have pesticides in it. And that may not be true. So I think this whole whether to buy organic, non-GMO, project verified, non-GMO, I think it can be very confusing for consumers.
I agree with you that it's by design. They are trying to confuse the issues. And I think organic is always best. People need to know that. Just because something is non-GMO, unfortunately, farmers are now spraying crops such as wheat, oats, barley, rye, other grains, and sugar cane and peas, lentils, beans, cantaloupe, and believe it or not, even like peppermint and spearmint, they're all being sprayed to dry them down before harvest with Roundup. And so just because something is non-GMO does not mean that you're not eating glyphosate or other agrochemicals.
Yeah, and I think so many people, again, are confused by this. I teach a weekly food education class just locally in my community. And that question comes up all the time, so I do a lot of education around that. But the average consumer who is not, you know, following all of this may not know. This DARC Act, or H.R. 1599, we really want to encourage people to contact their representatives and ask them to vote no on this.
Going to the Senate. So the best thing would be to contact your senators. And it also makes sense to contact your representatives. And if they voted against it, you know, please thank them for doing so. And if they voted for it, tell them you're watching. They're supposed to be representing their constituents, and they're obviously not when they do something like that.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of right to know anymore. That message is gone. I mean, we're at the point now where we need to know what we're eating.
Yes, I agree. And there's a lot of people out there, too, that think that we should be going for banning versus labeling. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that we have to hit this problem from every angle. We support labeling, we support boycotting, and we support banning. I think, you know, we can't put all our eggs in one basket. We just have to hit it from every angle.
And I think one of the values to the whole labeling controversy is it is raising awareness. And that's what we need to do, because I still run into people all the time that do not know what a GMO is.
Yeah.
And that education is key. One thing I wanted to ask about GMO-free USA, you have studies that you've accumulated.
It is true. We currently, our list is 2,029.
Aren't you incensed when you hear some of these spokespeople for the biotech industry just say there's testing that shows that GMOs are safe? I mean, I don't understand how they can get away with that.
Well, I can explain that, but back to our list of studies, I just want to clarify that what's on that list, we have 2,029 studies which suggest harmful effects, and they are studies that were done on, you know, the genetically engineered crops or the agrochemicals. They relate to health harm, they relate to environmental harm, and also non-target organisms, and economic harm as well. And in addition to peer-reviewed independent studies, there are also some reviews which are, you know, have been published in peer-reviewed journals, and there are also some reports which the majority is actually peer-reviewed independent studies, but there are some reports that We've found that are important and reliable, and those are included as well. And as for the industry list, when they say that they have, you know, thousands of safety studies, they think no one is looking. But we've actually taken a look. And what we've found on their list is really quite remarkable. We've found that their list includes, you know, mostly studies that were financed by industry. You know, industry paid for these studies. And we know that there are actually peer-reviewed studies that have found that industry-funded studies are biased. So, you know, that's a problem. There are studies that were done on unapproved varieties. There were studies that are performance type studies, which only seem to look at carcass size and weight, and they don't even consider health parameters. There are duplicate studies, and there are actually studies on their list that have found harmful effects, and they claim that they demonstrate safety. So when you really take a close look, it's absolute nonsense.
Yes, I know. And I listened to the DARC Act hearing in the House, and I heard one gentleman stand up who was for the bill say something to the effect, and he used the word rigorously, I remember that. He said that the FDA and the USDA rigorously test the GMOs before they put them on the market. And that is not true.
It certainly isn't.
And nobody called him out on that. And I thought, how can you make a claim like that that can be proven not to be true?
No, they rely on voluntary safety assessments that are conducted by the patent holders and the companies that profit from selling these GMOs.
But again, public hears something like this. And those that don't know any better, you know, they're those that believe that the FDA and the USDA has really got our back, and they would never approve these if, you know, they weren't safe. So I think it's just not true, and that's where the education is so important. Yeah, that was a pretty rough day to listen to that hearing and know that there were just so many lies. But we can't give up when something like this happens. I think it's important to just stay positive. And how do you stay positive with everything that you've been through? And
you know, I think as a mother, I feel responsible. And I just feel like we cannot leave this mess to our children and to future generations. You know, there's really nothing stronger than a mother's protective instinct for her children and for all of humanity. And I'm just driven. Because this is a mess, and we just have to clean it up. I feel responsible just because it happened under my watch.
I really commend you, for all the work you do. And I know that you're not paid for this job.
I am not paid a penny. You're exactly right. And I don't intend to be. I'm very fortunate that I can do this work. And any money that you know we raise from GMO for USA, we're all volunteers right now. It's all going into you know, testing and, you know, admin and whatnot, things that we really need to hire help. So hopefully someday we'll get to that point, but none of us are paid. We're all volunteers.
And we appreciate it greatly. Diana, is there, in closing, is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners? Any messages you want to give them?
You know, I would just say that, you know, it can be overwhelming when you first learn about genetically engineered foods. And I think, you know, to try and if you're overwhelmed, you know, about trying to avoid all GMOs, to start, you know, somewhere and work your way forward from there. So you could start with the Kellogg's boycott and Gerber as well. We did find that the corn in a Gerber product we tested was 100% BT corn, which is insecticide corn. So Gerber is high on our boycott list as well. And I would just say, you know, try to reconnect with your food. Just grow a little something, even if it's an herb on your windowsill. I think it helps.
I agree. But Diana, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. And you are truly an inspiration to many. The website is GMOfreeUSA.org and the Facebook page is GMOfreeUSA. And there's just daily multiple updates on great information. And go to that page and like it, and you will get as much information as you need. So thank you again for being with us.
Thank you, Carol, for having me on.
It's been truly a pleasure.